This is Fresh Air. Julie Kavner has a great voice. It was perfect for the part of the neurotic, insecure sister on Rhoda, the TV series which launched Kavner's career. That voice, with a little tweaking, is now best known as the voice of Marge Simpson. Here's Marge and the rest of the Simpsons sitting around the dinner table in an episode about legalized gambling coming to Springfield.
Mom, we're having a geography pageant at school, and I don't know which state to go as.
In honor of legalized gambling, why not go as a state of Nevada?
No, Nevada makes my butt look big.
Then how about going as Florida? You enjoy orange juice? Old people like you?
Dad, what do you think?
Shh. I'm trying to teach the baby to gamble.
Why?
I got a job at Burns' Casino. As you know, it's been my lifelong dream to become a blackjack dealer.
Your lifelong dream was to be a contestant on The Gong Show, and you did it in 1977, remember?
Now Kavner is co-starring in the new comedy I'll Do Anything, set in Hollywood. Kavner plays a film marketing researcher who's in love with the shallow and vain producer she works for, played by Albert Brooks. Here's one of their typical bedroom conversations with Kavner lecturing Brooks about his shortcomings.
No woman has ever told you that you have an almost barbaric insensitivity? That you seem to have lapsed into some final cynicism where you actually believe that not only does everyone think the way you do, but only you have the courage to express it. That you seem horribly certain that everyone else is sort of pretending when they talk about love. No one's ever said that sort of thing to you?
Yeah, I heard that. But I didn't know that's what you meant by shortcomings.
I asked Julie Kavner if she had to figure out why her character is in love with this guy.
Jim wrote such a complete script, and the everything's there. Everything's there for the actors. You don't have to make anything up. And what is there in his character is he's a very attractive man. He's a very powerful man. He's good in bed. He's funny. Also, he shares the same enthusiasm that my character does about the science of this market research business. He, of course, is hoping that this woman that I play can give him the answers, which, of course, is not possible. But he's intrigued that, you know, you can call up America and find out what they think.
Yeah, right. Your character runs the test screenings
right.
for him, his film company, where audiences are invited in and then they have to fill out questionnaires on their response to the film.
Right.
And of course, the film doesn't do well. The film's either killed or it's re-edited or something.
Right.
So do you have faith in these screenings in real life? And when it's your performance that's being evaluated by the test audience?
Well, like Jim Brooks said, you know, that you can use these this part of the process or not use it, but you can use it to, like, for instance, if it's a comedy, which this movie is, you know immediately if, you know, people are laughing or not, if the jokes work. So you can use it for that purpose. You can tell if you're getting across the point that you wanted to make, you know. So you can use it without compromising yourself. I had one favorite line that is not in the movie, but there was a scene where on one of their first dates, or the first date that my character and Albert's character had, and he drops her back off at the her place of business, and she says, "Do you want to come in and see how we do it?" And he's very excited, and he comes in, and it's the tracking room where there's like 75 people. They're all on a phone, little cubby holes, and they're all asking different questions. And he says, "Can you ever, you know, fix this information?" She says, no, of course not. But sometimes I can't resist asking America a personal question. And he says, "Like what?" And she says, "When do you feel more worthless, in the mornings or the afternoons?"
I love that yeah.
so much.
Now, I think before you auditioned for the part of Rhoda's sister, for the Rhoda show, you auditioned for that part on the Mary Tyler Moore show?
Right, that's right. A year before, they had written an episode on the Mary Tyler Moore show where Rhoda's sister, who you had never seen before, was going to get married. So I auditioned for that part, and I didn't get it. They cast somebody else, and evidently they received many letters that nobody bought that that woman could be Rhoda's sister, so when Valerie got her own show a year later, it was up for grabs again, and David Davis called me back in, and I re-auditioned. And Jim's first direction in my life from him came during that audition. After we did it, he said, maybe you should do this standing up.
The audition?
Yeah.
What's the difference?
Well, I think it had to do with energy. When you stand up and you're moving and you're acting out the scene more. So he was giving me great direction even then.
Because you were introduced to the American public in the role of Brenda Morgenstern, people would always wonder, like, what connection is there between the character and you? And she was a very, she had a bad self-image, you know, very self-conscious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did that connect with your life at all?
I don't know if I ever had a really bad self-image, or if I did, I hope I've grown out of it. You know, that's one great thing of getting older. You know, after you turn 40, you can kind of, I feel the benefit of that, as you can say, you know, you can't screw around with me anymore. I'm 40. I'm an adult.
Who do you have that attitude toward?
The world.
Uh-huh.
Yourself included.
Yeah, I'll be good. Was it hard for you to get roles when the series ended? Did you feel you were typecast in that part?
Well, I definitely didn't want to repeat myself as to this day. I mean, my interest in acting is to explore other lives and other people and other situations. So I was very careful not to do anything that, you know, smacked of the Brenda character. And I wound up doing dinner theater in Canada.
Wow.
Is that far enough away for you?
That'll do. Was it depressing to be doing dinner theater after having a big part on a TV series?
Well, actually, it was great because I came from theater. That was my background. And it was in Canada. And I love Canada. I really just a complete generalization. But the Canadians are a wonderful group of humans, and of course this is major generalization, but it was in Edmonton, and that's really Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a wonderful play that I did with Ray Buchtanica, who played the Benny Goodwin character on the Rhoda show. She was Brenda's boyfriend, who worked in the toll booth. And we did this play called It Had to Be You that was written by Renee Taylor and Joseph Bologna.
Hmm.
And it was, you know, it was a short, it was like 8 weeks run. It wasn't a lifetime. So it was a very funny play, and we had a good time.
So how long were you in dinner theater?
I did that play there, and I did it in Winnipeg. So, oh, and I also did a play, before that, while the Rhoda show was going on during a hiatus, I did a dinner theater. I did two for the Seesaw, Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater in Florida with Martin Sheen, directed by Burt Reynolds. So that was great. Dinner theater is not always as bad as you think it is because they've already eaten.
The scary thing about dinner theater, though, is it has the reputation of being the place where has-beens and never has-beens and never have-beens perform. You know what I mean? So it seems like it would feel a little bit like Siberia if you were acting.
Not really.
Mm-hmm.
Not really. I've been very lucky in my career. I've always been working with really wonderful people.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much what it's about.
My guest is Julie Kavner. She's co-starring in the new movie, I'll Do Anything. More after this break. This is Fresh Air. Back with actress Julie Kavner. So how did Woody Allen cast you in... you've been in several of his films. How did he cast you in Hannah and Her Sisters?
I got a call out of the blue, which I thought was like a prank call or a joke call. You know, did I want to be in a Woody Allen movie? And that was it.
Why'd you think it was a joke?
Well, you know, out of never met the man, never auditioned for the man, you know, a dream that I never, you know, thought would come true kind of thing. And yet there it was.
So did you have to audition for him, or did he just sign you?
The first time I met Woody Allen was on the set, my first day of work, and he was down the hall. It was what they call a dolly shot, where the camera is on tracks and is moving, and he was down the hall figuring out his shot, and I looked, you know, out of the doorway at him and waved, and he waved back, and that's how I met Woody Allen.
I want to ask you about the Tracy Ullman show where you worked for several years. Now, how did you get on that show, in which you had a chance to play all kinds of characters?
That was the best and hardest. It was the hardest work I've ever done. It was like going back to school and being paid for it. Mm-hmm. The education was just ongoing for the 3.5 years that we did the show, or 4 years, I think 3.5. At any rate, we were all of us required to do characters, I mean, on such a wide range, and wigs and prosthetics and padding and no padding and accents and singing and dancing and, I mean, things that we had never done before, that I had never done before. And the widest range of work I have ever done, and I think it really opened me up. I'm very grateful to have been a part of that show.
Now, you did sing on the Tracy Ullman show.
Yes, ma'am.
Roles. And the new movie that you're in, I'll Do Anything, was originally a musical. Did you have songs in that?
I had one song. I had a ballad.
Do you remember how it went?
Well, yes, I do, because I sang it for a year. But if you think I'm going to sing it over the radio...
I've got another thing coming, huh?
Yes, yeah, so to speak.
Did you take singing lessons for it or anything?
I took singing lessons for the movie, which was also... I mean, I you know, being an actor is a pretty great job. It was invaluable. I'll have it for the rest of my life.
Speaking of voices,
yeah,
The Simpsons originated on the Tracy Ullman show.
Right.
And that's when you were first asked to play Marge Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
What was your first reaction to the concept of being the voice of Marge?
Well, again, that was in, for the very first show, we had 10 days. And it was, you know, the very, very beginning of the process of figuring out what the show should be. And it was just one more thing that we were asked to do that we had never done, or that I had never done before. And it was a wonderful cartoon and a wonderful family from the mind of Matt Groening. It was based on his vision of himself in his family. And it was, so it was terrific to begin with. And that voice came out of, before I took this wonderful year of singing lessons, I had very, very tired voice, and I just raised it a little bit and said, how about this for Marge? And they said, okay.
So how do you change your voice to become Marge?
I roughen it up and I raise it a bit. I raise it an octave or so.
Can you do a little?
Well, it's just kind of up there like that and a little more tired.
Right. Now, does it hurt your voice to do that?
Not at all. The sisters, on the other hand, the two twin sisters, are an octave lower. Do I have a range or what, Terry?
You want to do one of the sisters?
Well, they happen to be my favorites.
Oh, that's great. You have a wonderful voice. Was your voice husky when you were young?
Yeah, I was born this way. I came out of my mom and said, hello, Rose. Hello, Dave.
but did you have a deep voice when you were young?
Yeah, they used to send me home. They always used to think I had laryngitis.
Oh, the nurses?
Mm-hmm.
You have a very New York voice, but you grew up in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, Rose and Dave, who I just mentioned to you, my
parents,
they're from New York, and they taught me how to speak English. You see, so that's why I sound like this, as opposed to something lovely.
Now, what brought your parents to Los Angeles?
Well, it was after, they moved to L.A. in the 40s, so it was after the war, and just work and wanting to leave the East Coast.
What did they do for a living?
My dad's a furniture manufacturer, and salesman, and my mom is a family counselor.
So when you were growing up in L.A., did you go to Beverly Hills High?
Yep, I did.
Was status in school related at all to the status of parents?
Yes, it was. Everything you think about Beverly Hills and that high school, and I hated it. I hated all of it. I hated it.
So
I think I'll say it again.
Yeah.
I hated it.
Did you like it?
No, Terry. I really hated it.
So having your father in the furniture business kind of guaranteed you a lower status in school?
Well, there were a lot of rich kids, you know, a lot of cliques going on and a lot of stuff like that, which I think affects people of that age. I don't think you can completely... I mean, I had a couple of friends.
So do you know what you'll be doing for your next role?
Well, I get to work with Mr. Woody Allen again.
On a
project that he's doing. I don't know if I should... I don't know if this has been released yet or not. I'm very protective of the man, so...
I know, and he hates to say what...
Yeah.
What scripts are about, so I won't push you on that.
Okay.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you.
Julie Kavner co-stars in the new comedy, I'll Do Anything. This is Fresh Air.